to get to as many people as possible, so regulars are limited today to a minute and allow us to talk to get other voices involved. Let me go to Raymond. Raymond, thanks for waiting.
Hey, thank you, Amos. Real quick, yesterday hurt. I mean, that when it happened, that really hurt.
Yeah.
And what really concerns me is that I sat down and talked to a 22-year-old gentleman yesterday at McDonald's, and he told me he feels like he lives in two different societies. You can call it the suits versus the sags. He said that, you know, and he told me, I asked him to be honest with me. He said, they view us as outcasts. They roll up their windows, they lock their doors, they frown at us. And I'm talking about our community. Mm-hmm. They don't speak to us, and they wonder why we feel lost. And I heard her say a few things like, he's not a bad person, and they tried to get help for him. And it's almost like, I wonder why people are viewed differently when we are all the same, because I speak to people, and that really concerns me. But I just don't know how we do it societally. How do we change that perception that we have? We live in two societies within our community. You can call it the good versus the someone else, or I don't know how you classify, but if you look at it, those who right. exist in one area and those who exist in another, we can get behind a podium and have speeches all day and walk down streets. And he told me, he said, oh man, we laugh at y'all. I said, what do you mean? Why are you laughing at all? It's a joke. It's a bunch of talk. And he was giving me real talk when he was being honest. And I don't know what to do, because I feel, and yesterday hurt with that officer and that young man, because I'm like, we're in trouble. And I just had to share that with you, the conversation I have.
All right, that's a good point. I appreciate it. Let me go to William right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing,
you
Mr.
Got,
Brown?
You got 1 minute.
All right. Now, my problem with the family and the officer family,
okay.
But what I was wondering, and I'm going to cut this short, I am wondering, I heard all of the comments, what was that young man doing with an assault rifle? I was in Vietnam. I had a reason to have a assault rifle.
You know,
before I left.
And that
before
is,
I left.
Yeah.
Before I left, I turned that assault rifle in and had no need for one since. Why did that young man have an assault rifle?
And that is the question I want to know. And when I read the federal regulations on the instant background check that you're supposed to get when you buy a weapon legally, it looks like that under the background check regulations, and because he had not been convicted of a crime for over 5 years, that legally he could have bought that assault weapon. I'm still trying to research that, but it looks like the misdemeanor that he was found guilty of might not have disqualified him from buying that weapon legally. I still want to do some research on that. I don't think anybody ought to have military assault weapons except the military in our streets. Now, some of my Second Amendment friends will disagree, and we're going to have to agree to disagree on that. But I think he was not a convicted felon, and he had not had any kind of convictions since 2008 and had already served time and had finished his probation by 2009. So, and I'm still looking at the rules under the federal regulations. He might have been eligible to buy the weapon legally. We need to know how that weapon got from the factory to 34th and Forest Manor.
Until he was in.
And, you know, and it shouldn't be me just looking for it. The Indianapolis Star ought to put two or three top reporters. How many reporters did they have working on this story? They bragged that they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 journalists working on their coverage of this shooting. I'd like to see at least three or four of them trace where that gun started from the factory to 34th and Forest Manor. We need to know. We need to start cracking down on these illegal gun sales, if they were illegal, or legal sales. Or why does anybody need an AK-47 type assault weapon in any kind of city? I appreciate it. Let me go to Joni right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Joni.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. What's up?
Yes, I was just wondering, the officer, how did he even get to that area? Did he get a dispatch, or how did he even, was he by his help? How did he even led to that area?
He was dispatched along with three other officers on a report of shots fired. Officer Wren was the second officer to respond. When they got there, they discovered that Mr. Davis was holding the assault weapon. They asked him to lower the weapon, put the weapon on the ground, and show his hands. Mr. Davis did not do that. According to the police report, he started moving west and south from 34th Street. A third officer responded. When that officer responded, that's when he heard a whole bunch of shots. He turned around the corner. He saw Officer Wren down. He saw Mr. Davis down. There are witnesses that say they saw Mr. Davis open fire on the officers, and there are witnesses that say the officers returned fire. That's all we know.
So it was shots fired before the police even got there?
The report from 911 was shots fired. So somebody called and said shots fired. And I'm looking, your initial response from IMPD was at 923. And at 9:37, the police radio traffic said, officer down.
So his family, before they ran in the house and got down, like the lady said, they were nowhere around him at all before he started supposedly shooting?
It was not inside the house, and I cannot answer one way or another whether there were people outside or where these witnesses were. One of the things that is a little different in this case, the police department has not sent out unsolicited to all media the complete police report. And to be honest with you, I've been too busy this morning on some other stuff to ask them for that. I wish that if you notice, none of the news media have put links on their website to the complete police report. So I don't think it's out yet. It needs to be out because there are a lot of legitimate questions from people, but it was a response to a 911 call, as I understand it. And at some point, if it was a response to a 911 call, they need to release the 911 tape so we can all hear what transpired. I appreciate the call. Thank you, my dear. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons. Name is. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more after these. Back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Yes. Do you see the radicalness of way that cops beat the poor woman on the interstate on TV? Where I forgot where the state it is. I mean, that's just how some of them work. You know, that's how some of them are. You know, it's a shame. You know, I'm for a young man, I don't know too much about him. I put him out to be a bad person or anything, but that's the way IPD. I mean, some of the cops, they're not above the law. You know.
All right.
And I'm just wondering at this point, where are the black militant, black supremacists? Well, that's who I want to be with because, you know, I'm getting tired. I thought I was ready for revolution. I got 30 guns in my house. I'm ready for them.
That's enough of that. We'll let you go back to the 70s, 239-1310. Let me go to D. Hi, D.
Hey, Amos, man, that's a tough call to follow up. Again, Angola, Bloomington, Fort Wayne, Gary, Goshen, Muncie, Oakland City, South Bend. You just got through again being frustrated. I know the mayor listens to your show or he has other people listening to your show. Why won't he come on your show and say why is his name and his city not on this list against these illegal guns?
Well, I tell you what, leave it at that. When you see him at Indiana Black Expo, ask him that question. Let me go to Elise at 239-13. Elsie, I'm sorry, at 239-1310. Hi, Elsie.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what's up?
I just want to talk about these guns. You know, years ago, I had a gun, and there was a lady who said something about my mother, which it was a hearsay. I had a gun because someone had broken my house.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, to make a long story short, I was going to take this gun and really premeditate to shoot this woman. It just so happened she wasn't home, but I had about six children then. But I just thank God that I didn't do that. The woman wasn't home.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, I was going to do this. So what I'm trying to say is, I don't think people should have guns, you know. I thank God that he intervened for me, and this is a spiritual warfare we're in. And I don't know about the young man that had, why would he have an AK-47? Anybody have that kind of gun around? I mean, what are guns for? Made to kill.
Yeah, and
you got people that has mental issues.
Mm-hmm.
You gonna let them get guns? You don't know. You know, it's just crazy. We're living in a crazy world. So I just pray for this world now.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Congressman Andre Carson. Is concerned about anything that negative that happens in this community in the 7th Congressional District. He's on our live line. Congressman, how you doing?
Dr. Brown, it's good hearing from you. Unfortunate circumstances. We're leaving 16th and Harding Street right now at a labor event. But I could tell you, as you know, Dr. Brown, Indianapolis has a serious violent crime problem. It's senseless. It's tragic. We have to come together and do something about it. There are a lot of great non-for-profits and NGOs who are doing the work. There are a lot of great churches, 10 Point Coalition, great pastors that are doing this kind of ministry. Law enforcement officers are putting their lives on the line each and every day. But it's clear that something is awry because we're not reaching the core of the issue. Yes, there are systemic issues. Yes, there are institutional issues. Yes, there are components that date back decades and centuries even. But as we speak, there's a serious issue, Amos, as it relates to the drug cartels that have growing influence in our communities. And I'm seeing a spirit of growing disrespect for culture, for adults. And we have to stand up, Amos, as responsible citizens and say enough is enough.
Let me ask a couple of questions, because I was stunned that Indiana law regulates the use of handguns. You got to have a permit, but you don't need a permit for a rifle, and you definitely don't need a permit for an automatic weapon, not a semi-automatic weapon, an AK-47 type weapon. And then my good friends at the Indiana State Police, I asked them about that, and they gave me the rules and regulations. And then they also talked about the National Instant Criminal Background Check that I know you're familiar with.
Sure.
And when I looked over those regulations, it says the federal can prohibit you from buying a weapon if you're an unlawful user and or an addict of any controlled substance. For example, a person convicted for the use or possession of a controlled substance within the past year. Mr. Davis, the alleged murderer of Officer Wren, he was convicted in 08. So based on the regulations, he could have legitimately bought that assault weapon. So two questions. First of all, Congressman, how important is it that the men and women of law enforcement work with ATF, work with the FBI, that we get a trace on the entire history of that weapon from the time from when it was in the factory to who had it last?
I think it's a priority. You know, President Clinton, and you remember this,
yeah,
he had a huge movement on this assault rifles ban. Even now, as we're moving forward, I don't think that anyone should own an assault rifle with the exception of law enforcement personnel and the U.S. military. If we work together collaboratively, and agencies have to do this, it shouldn't take another death for agencies locally and federally to work together to trace the source of these dangerous weapons. But even more so than that, Dr. Brown, I think it's critically important that we act swiftly on the savage, barbaric, uncivilized, animalistic behavior that we're dealing with. Our children are in need of us right now, our young boys and our young girls. And even while we reach out to them and nurture and mentor them, we tried to do this with the summer jobs initiative we had a few weeks ago. We're going to do it again with the jobs fair. We're going to do it again with working with not-for-profits. But there's another segment in our society, Amos. Some say they're irredeemable. I saw some hateful online comments this weekend. Folks were suggesting that Broad Ripple and places like Broad Ripple were better places in the 50s and 60s, sweeping all minorities into a vacuum, into a silo, when there are few bad actors. And we have to deal with these bad actors, Amos. These folks who make it uncomfortable for you and me to go to the gas station, make it uncomfortable for other folks to go to the theaters without there being disruption. We have to be firm dealing with these individuals who are misrepresenting the black community. I'm going to be honest. they're giving the black community a bad name. We just celebrated 50 years of the Voting Rights Act, where many died to have the right to vote, to have us into society as respectable human beings, and to have a few bad actors who are reaffirming dangerous stereotypes about our community, who are encouraging mythologies, and who are disrespectful. It has to stop. It absolutely has to stop. We cannot make excuses for this savagery anymore.
Is it then time, Congressman, you might be the only one in this city that could call a meeting and everybody would show up. Is it time then for you to call the meeting?
I've said this repeatedly. I want to call a meeting. I'm open to calling a meeting. But the meeting that I would like to call, certainly with leaders, but I want to call a meeting. Listen, I want to call a meeting with those folks who are considered to be outcasts. I want to call a meeting with those who have a connection and who have a credibility and who are linked to these issues and who have the credibility to address these issues in a meaningful way and cause them to stop. I sat at a meeting with a group of some of our prominent pastors and faith leaders and city officials. I think you were there a few weeks ago, that perhaps we need to talk to the drug cartels themselves because we have a huge criminal problem. There are great organizations out there. There are great pastors and ministries and imams and rabbis who are doing great work. But Dr. Brown, we have to do something about this savage element. And I say that liberally, savage, barbaric element that must be confronted with force. We cannot be in fear. We can't be in fear of going down the Monon. We can't be in fear of going to the gas station. We should not be in fear in taking our spouse or our loved one out to dinner or even going to a club because we're afraid somebody's going to shoot up the club. This should have stopped in the 80s and the 90s when I was going to the club.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still there, Amos, and we have a serious issue that must be addressed. I'm willing to call a meeting. I think I talked to Pastor Hampton at Light of the World earlier today. He's doing a phenomenal job, and the 10-Point Coalition, Reverend Charles, they're doing a great job. A lot of ministries out there are doing it. Pastor Jeffrey Johnson and others are doing a phenomenal job. But we have to get to the root of the problem, Dr. Brown. And, you know, it disappoints me when someone decides to shoot someone. The first thing people say is, well, where are the black leaders? Where are the pastors? As if those leaders and pastors caused that person to do harm to innocent human beings. We have to deal with the barbaric behavior. It's unacceptable. I'd be open to calling a meeting, not only with our faith community, and not only with our interfaith community, Christians and Muslims and Jews from all across the spectrum, but from some of our young gang leaders, from some of our leaders who are still involved in the criminal element, and sit down with them in a closed-door session. I don't even need a camera there. Mm-hmm. But in a closed-door session, and say enough is enough.
All right, I appreciate it, my brother. Thank you, Congressman Andre Carson. I appreciate it. Let me go to Reverend Walker right quick. Reverend?
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine, sir.
Good, good. Very quickly, first of all, I'm going to say my thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Perry Wren, and also thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Davis Jr. Amos, tomorrow I will be holding a prayer vigil on behalf of a fallen officer, and it's going to be a high honors that is presented to a fallen officer in the city who died in the line of duty. And that prayer vigil will begin at 12 o'clock. It's open to the public. There are many city leaders that's going to be present. I'm going to have about 100 young boys present there talking to them about making better and good decisions. And we just want to support and be there for the family of the fallen officer at 12 o'clock noon tomorrow at 34th and 4th Manor right there at the site.
So this is obviously the normal vigil that occurs for any homicide in our city.
Absolutely.
And this prayer vigil will be at 12. So it occurs whether you're black or white or Hispanic or Asian, whether you're a police officer or just an ordinary individual.
Exactly. Just an ordinary individual, but high honors, meaning that he was a public safety individual who put his life on the line However, there's going to be, I'm going to get a hold of the Davis family to conduct a prayer vigil on the behalf of Davis Jr. for a speedy and hopefully recovery from his injuries as well.
All right. That's going to be 12 noon tomorrow at 34th and Forest Manor. Reverend Malachi Walker, always good to talk to you. Thank you very, very much. 239-1310. 239-1310. Let me take a quick break. And then we got some other folk just hearing how the community feels. Combination of anger. Not resignation, but determination that something has to be done, that maybe this has crossed the line. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. Got a very extensive email at praiseindy.com where they kind of had they're African American, and they had a negative reaction to hearing the interview with members of Major Davis Jr.'s family. But it's the last sentence that I want to, you know, talk about. Here's some advice, the emailer writes. This year's summer celebration should not be a celebration with this amount of crime in the city. The entire event should be restructured or canceled so we can get a grip on this violence. We need to stop having things downtown, stop making excuses, stop turning the cheek, and do something, because until we do, we're only going to continue to fool ourselves. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. I believe I have another aunt of Mr. Davis on the line, Chanel Bowers. Hi.
Hi, Amos. How are you?
I'm fine.
First of all, my heart goes out to the cop's family, as well as my own family. I'm going to touch on something differently than my sister.
Okay.
My spirit is real, real troubled right now. The Bowers / Davis family, I just want Channel 8 to know we are not bad people. My nephew made a horrible mistake, if he made that mistake, because whatever happened to proving innocent until proven guilty. No one really knows what happened until we get to the bottom of it. But Channel 8 made our family look like we were just the worst people in the city of Indianapolis. And for my family, I have to stand up and tell the community, we are all God-bearing people. Some of us have had some troubles, but I believe in God, and I know that he'll turn this situation around. Now, I also want to say, I can remember being a 23-year-old girl going to 30th and Eastern with that same cop, may his spirit rest in peace, sitting in a car with a smile on his face as they beat my brother, Major Senior, to death. But no one's talking about that. No one. They're just making it seem like they're all criminal. You know, we have to deal with this every day of our lives as well.
Let me ask a question. Did the family ever try to pursue a wrongful death suit in the case of Mr. Davis Sr.?
His wife, my dad, and his mom handled that. So I don't know what the outcome was. It was a little shaky or what have you. I didn't inquire. I was 23 years old at the time, still mm-hmm. very young, didn't really know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I just had to touch on that.
Okay.
Because I remember his face as if it were yesterday. And the police, a lot of these police out here are very disrespectful, even to me as a female. Mm. When they hear my name, even, and it's never for trouble, you're Major Davis' sister. So automatically I have a label on me.
Mm.
You know, there are good cops, but there are a lot of bad cops out here. And by no means do I wish death on anyone for any reason. I'm never going to be that angry, but I had to call you today. You and I have spoke a lot about a lot of different issues. I listen to the show every day, but Channel 8 just made it seem like we were all monsters, and I have to stand and say I am a true woman of God.
Ms. Bowers,
as well as majority of my family, so I did not appreciate that at all, and we too are dealing with this. And yes, the police did treat us horribly bad at the hospital. I got there after my sister had left. You know, and they yelled at me, what are you doing here? And I said, well, my nephew, if you don't get in the car, you're going to jail. I was woke up out of my sleep. So I'm like jumping up, running to the hospital. I don't even know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just so disrespectful. I don't go to clubs because I don't ever want a cop to say anything to me. I try to be nowhere where a cop has to say anything to me, because 95% of the police in Indianapolis mistreat the Bowers and the Davis family. I need the community to know that.
Ms. Bowers, I appreciate you calling. Thank you.
And I do thank you, Amos, and the pastor prior to. I thank him because he's the only person that actually said he's praying for us as well, because we're dealing with this too.
I think there's a lot of people praying for you as well as praying for Officer Wren's family. I appreciate it. Let me go to Anonymous right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you today?
I'm here.
I know. I feel you on that. I've been listening to your program. And this is my conclusion of everything that I've heard today. I know there's a lot of different beliefs, religious beliefs. A scripture came to my mind in Ephesians chapter 6 where it says, we fight not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against rulers, against spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. In the battle that we're dealing with as a whole, not just this situation here, but all the situations that have been happening in our community, it's all spiritual in nature. And what this also reminds me of is, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but that game that they have at Chuck E. Cheese,
mm-hmm.
where these little gophers pop up out
the
hole.
Yeah, the whack-a-mole. Yeah.
Yeah, and you hit them with a mallet. And when you hit one, another one pops up. You hit another one. You hit that one, another one pops up. We are dealing with the symptoms of the situations that's going on in our community instead of getting to the root. And when we get to the root problem and the root cause of our situation, then and only then will these situations be taken care of. If we continue to fight the symptoms, we're going to continue to get the same result.
All right, good point. Let me go to Don right quick. Don, you got about a minute. We're holding the regulars to a minute today. What's up?
Okay, how you doing, Amos?
Fine.
Hey, one thing, you know, guns will never go away. As far as the Constitution of the United States, you know, they have the right to bear arms, and you know that that's a catch-all, and that's never going to go away. The problem that we have is the behavior of our community. You know, we say that we pray, but prayer has never stopped a bullet. I've never seen prayer stop a bullet. And then we say that the 10-Point Coalition and all these other organizations, they've helped curb crime. But last year, you look at the number of crimes that we had, you know, homicides, they've gone up this year.
Yes.
So if they've helped, why is the number going up? You know, if anything, the number should be going down. So their effectiveness really doesn't, you know, stand to support that fact. Again, like I said, this community, I hate to say it, and I always say this to you, Amos, say it loud, I'm black and I'm ashamed. And I apologize for our community and our behavior. I have to piggyback on Congressman Andre Carson. This behavior doesn't have anything to do with color. I mean, those policemen were looking out for their guy, just like that family's looking out for their family. So there's two sides to this coin here, but there's an officer that's dead.
And that is the bottom, and that's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line. A man walking around with an assault rifle, if he hadn't had an assault rifle, I'm not saying we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, I'm with you when you're right, my brother. Let me go to Buck right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, what's up, Amos? I've been listening to the show, and my thing with the show is it's really, you know, on both parts of everybody, but, you know, how they're making the family look bad is, the cops and the media got to be honest with stuff. You know, it's just what I'm just listening to. How, like when you was talking earlier about Major Davis, the son. I mean, nobody brought up the fact that this man had two open cases against the police before he ended up getting killed. You know, and it's like, and I'm hearing you said about the guy. Honestly,
wait, Buck, I'm confused. Who had an open case against the police?
When you know the police killed your daddy. And nobody done about it, and all of a sudden now you come in conversation with one, not saying it's right, but you know, you got a mental thing there. But I just wanted to comment on that and say that.
Alright, appreciate it. Let me go to Anonymous right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Anonymous.
Yes.
You're on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry, Amos. You know what? I knew the father and the son. I'm raised over in Brightwood. And these murders are just crazy. I've been to so many funerals. The young man that got killed up in Putnamville. You know what? It's a curse. Because that young man had watched his grandmother and mother be killed, and then he had to kill a man when he was 12 years old. Now, he gets killed in Putnamville. Now, I just spoke with Major Junior 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and we were talking on 25th and Sherman, and he wanted change. But it was that cognitive thing, and it goes back to what you said. When they are victims of violent crimes themselves, his father and his mommy, he died in Putnamville. These young men have things that are in their minds, and there's no justification for their behavior. But you have to sit back and think, what's rolling in their minds when these things are going on? Who are they really spilling out their real heart and souls to, letting them know where they at emotionally, mentally, physically? It's not coming off. And so what they're doing, they're coming out here and they're throwing it out. I, in fact, the officer that got killed, we were at a community meeting. He came up to me afterwards and hugged me and said, because I too am an ex-convicted felon. And he said, you keep telling your story because you're going to affect someone.
All right. I appreciate it. Let me go, because I think I got the mom of Major Davis Jr. Is this Cynthia Davis?
Yes.
How are you?
I am fine.
I got about a couple minutes before I have to sign off. What do you want this community to know about your son?
I want them to know that he is not a bad person. All these accusations that they're putting out here, none of them are absolutely true. And I also want the community to know I am very sorry for the loss of this officer. My heart goes out to that family. I lost a husband, so I know how that feels. If you haven't been in their shoes, then you don't know. But I've been there, and I understand, and I am so sorry. I wish I could rewind time, but I cannot do that. But I would like for everybody to help me try to find a way to see my son. He's on life support. I know what he did was wrong, and he has to answer for that. I understand that. But I am a mother, and I deserve, if nothing else, to see my son. And I need the support of everyone who can try to help me make way possible to see my son.
What reason did they give that you can't? Because it's my understanding that because that is a detention facility, is basically a hospital room that is also a jail cell, that no family member gets to see anyone that is in that detention ward.
Yes, that's what they told me.
Okay.
But my thing is, how can you be under arrest when he's not even copacetic to understand anything that they say or do to him? So how could you say that and put him up under here like that and stop the mother from seeing him when he's on a life support system?
The person that's telling you that, is that a representative of Eskenazi?
Yes, and a matter of fact, let me put this out to the whole Indianapolis, Indiana area. Saturday when we was there, they told us we had to leave.
I heard
they
that.
Put
who
us
told,
out the
who
hospital.
Told you, who specifically told you that?
The officer, I didn't get his name because I was very emotional.
Oh, I can understand.
And the head lady of the surgery thing, and also the chaplain man. Holt, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Chaplain Holt. He told me that. And they told me we had to leave right then and there. I couldn't see him. I can't talk to him. I can't call the hospital. And I could not come to the hospital. How do you do a mother like that? How do you treat a mother like that?
That I can understand where you're coming from. Have you had any contact with the hospital since Saturday
no,
night?
No, they were not. And when I call, they said, we can't give you information. They hangs up on me. They won't even let me come to the hospital. They won't let me in. They won't let me do anything. And it's really hurtful to a parent.
Miss Davis, I want you to do me a favor. As I sign off, Drew is going to pick up the phone. If you would be so kind as to give Drew a phone number where you can be reached during the day. I will make you a promise. And, when I get off the air, I am calling Eskenazi. And
okay.
I'm going to ask Eskenazi very nice that a top official of the hospital call you and explain to you the rules of the game. You may not like the rules of the game. Okay. But you as a taxpayer, you as a mom, are at least owed the rules of the game. I'm from the school of, you may not like the rules, but you're owed an explanation of the rules, even if you don't like them. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And what it sounds like is, at least you're owed the respect to be given the rules of the game. Now, they may not give you the condition because he's an adult, and under the HIPAA laws, they would be within their rights not telling you unless the situation deteriorated. But I think, you know, hearing that and hearing the pain, and I understand not seeing him. I get that. But it would seem to me denying any basic information of how they're doing, somebody's got to explain that to me as well. So I'll make that call.
Okay. I would appreciate it.
Okay. I appreciate you calling. Hold on and give Drew that information, and we'll do it all again tomorrow. Same time, same station. This afternoon's news. Thank you, everybody, for calling.